Hello, and welcome to this episode marking the start of Season 5 of the Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Did you enjoy your break, Graham?
Well, I did, but honestly, it seems like no time at all since we were recording our three-part coverage of the Deutsche Bank consent order.
Well, it wasn't too long ago, really, but I suspect we share a difficulty just at the moment in telling the weeks apart.
Ray, it has been the oddest summer of my life by quite some margin.
Indeed, including that one you spent in traction, probably.
Even that one.
Yeah, but the one constant is financial crime, of course. It never stops.
It doesn't, and nor does the fight against it, fortunately. And we have an example of that today, don't we?
Yes, we do, Graham. The Wolfsburg Group have released their long-anticipated FAQ on source of wealth and source of funds, and we've been studying it.
Long-anticipated is right, isn't it, Ray? Mm. When did we first see a draft of this?
Well, a good couple of years ago, Graham, and at that time it looked quite close to finished.
So what could have happened in the meantime?
Well, we can only speculate, Graham. But the nature of the Wolfsburg Group means that sign-off of anything is likely to be protracted.
Actually, that is a good point, Ray. Perhaps we should start there. What is the Wolfsburg Group?
It's a group of leading financial institutions working collectively to drive forward the anti-financial crime agenda.
Indeed. And let me run quickly through the list of them. Mm. They are Banco Santander, Bank of America, Barclays, Citigroup, Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank, Goldman Sachs, HSBC, JP Morgan Chase, MUFG Bank, Societe Generale, Standard Chartered Bank, and UBS.
Oh, thanks for that, Graham. It produces guidance that is widely considered authoritative. Listeners to this podcast will know the Wolfsburg Group as the body behind the correspondent banking questionnaire that banks tend to use to help identify risks in their correspondent banking relationships.
Hmm. But of course they are more than that and maintain a library of FAQs on areas of due diligence where guidance is helpful, like private banking and beneficial ownership.
Indeed, Graham. And if you're undertaking CDD on a trust and you haven't read the Wolfsburg FAQ on beneficial ownership, stop now and go and read it.
Indeed. That filled a bit of a gap in the available guidance for me too.
But this newest addition to the Wolfsburg Library looks at the thorny area of source of funds and source of wealth, specifically in a private banking and wealth management context.
Yes, although the principles read across seamlessly to other contexts where these are relevant too.
Hmm, and I suppose we should begin by defining our terms.
Yes, we should. There is a huge amount of confusion around the terms source of wealth and source of funds. Sometimes, to be honest, they are used interchangeably, but they actually mean very different things.
They do. Let's begin with source of funds, which, on the face of it, is quite self-explanatory. What is the source of the funds that the customer is bringing into the account?
Except, what do you mean by source? Well, do you mean what institution and account is on the other end of the transfer of funds? Or do you mean how did the client become entitled to receive that money?
Oh, well, yes, I see. Well, as far as Wolfsburg is concerned, you should know both of those things.
And I think that's quite right. They list a number of aspects that, subject to a risk-based approach, you would want to identify. There's the amount or value and type of financial instrument or assets funding the account, if it's other than cash, including the activities that generate those funds.
Also, the method of transfer, the remitting party, and where applicable, the FI from which the transfer originated. And finally, the country from where the fund transfer originated.
And they also state that where the account is being funded by a third party, you are clear on the relationship between the client and the third party.
Mm. That's quite a lot, actually, but it is subject to a risk-based approach, so it won't be full drains up every time.
No, it won't, but you'd want to know enough to be comfortable there weren't any hidden risks.
Absolutely. Now, like all due diligence, this happens before you accept the client's business and gets repeated periodically or as issues arise.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, many people would argue that source of funds covers all your risks. You have insight into where all the money comes from that's flowing into your institution from this client. You're comfortable as to how it came to be earned and where and who it's received from. Why go any further?
And in many situations, Ray, that is fair enough, but especially in higher risk situations, you'd need to look at source of wealth as well.
So source of funds is always needed, source of wealth just sometimes?
Yes, the exact requirement's going to depend on your particular jurisdiction and your own firm's policies and procedures, but I'd say you'd expect to conduct source of wealth inquiries less frequently than source of funds ones.
Gotcha. So how is source of wealth different from source of funds?
Well, in a number of ways. The first big difference is that you're no longer just looking at property that comes into the bank.
Oh?
No. When you think about it, source of funds only looks at what touches the bank. It isn't concerned with any money that the client holds at other institutions or transactions it carries out through other banks.
Whereas source of wealth looks at the customer's total wealth, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Ray. It's about understanding how the client acquired the financial worth that they have today.
So, if as a bank or other institution we're only exposed to a subset of a client's financial affairs, why should we worry about the rest that we're not exposed to?
Now, that is the key question, Ray. And without understanding the client's source of wealth, we can't be absolutely sure that we're not laundering money for them.
Well, let's see why. We've always considered this a three-step process. First, gain an appreciation of the client's total net worth.
Yeah, and here Wolfsburg suggests that an exact figure would be overkill.
Quite so, but let's come back to that. Second, you'd need to understand the various wealth-generating activities that contributed to that total.
And step three?
That would be selective and risk-based corroboration of some of that information.
So, what are you worth? How did you come to be worth it? And what evidence is there?
Yeah, that's about it.
So, given that Wolfsburg suggests there's no need to go to town on establishing a definitive amount for the total net worth, why do we need to bother?
Well, I think we'd agree that a forensically derived total isn't necessary, but you'd have to get the order of magnitude right.
And I can give you an example in asset management, Ray, that illustrates this.
Well, please do.
Well, let's say that I'm at my bank arranging for them to manage £10 million for me. Quite rightly, they want to know that this isn't criminally derived. And I'm going to detail for them the provenance of this £10 million. I'll show them how my party hats business has generated consistent profits over a couple of decades. And they can check the published accounts that will corroborate this.
It's been a good business for you, Graham. That sounds absolutely... Yeah, I mean, that sounds absolutely fine to me.
Well, yes, it does. They take my £10 million and they invest it for me. And tomorrow, though, I'm going to go to another bank with another £10 million and tell them exactly the same story.
Ah.
And I place £10 million there as well and move on to the next bank and do exactly the same again.
I can see the problem.
And sometimes it's not even a different bank, Ray. I mean, I know banks where the teams in, say, Zurich and London would never know if they banked the same person and were relying on the same set of source of wealth information for two completely different lots of money.
Well, that's a problem then.
Yes, it is, because if I can demonstrate the bona fides of £10 million, I can use it to place £10 million in, well, hundreds of banks. £10 million of it is good money. The rest of it could be from, frankly, any kind of criminal enterprise.
So you have to begin with an appreciation of overall net worth, not down to the last penny, but as a ballpark estimate.
Yes, then you have to determine where that all came from. Mm. Wolfsburg splits this into three distinct categories.
First, there's what it calls family or generational wealth and personal backgrounds, which would include inheritances, divorce settlements, and so on.
Mm. It also lists under this category the sale of assets, which well, we know that can be problematic.
Yes, sale of property is not a good source of wealth because you don't know how the property was acquired in the first place. Fortunately, the FAQ states information should be collected on underlying activities that have generated the wealth.
Quite right. And elsewhere in the FAQ, it speaks about checking the land registry to ascertain the appreciation in value during its ownership.
Mm.
Second, we have income, revenue and business activities, which pretty much speaks for itself. And then there is the third category, investment activities, where, again, the focus needs to be on how the investments were acquired in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And how they've grown over time. Mm. So, this is where we think about how on earth we could go about getting and corroborating all this information. And all banks struggle with this in our experience. So getting some clear guidance would be incredibly helpful.
Yes, and here is where Wolfsburg comes to the rescue to an extent.
Yes, they say, and I'm going to quote, "The due diligence process, when it includes source of wealth, involves the collection of relevant information and may include corroboration. This should not be seen as a documentary exercise, and consideration should be given as to whether the customer's source of wealth appears legitimate and the collected information is plausible, i.e. the information provided by the customer is reasonable, with regards to the customer's overall wealth and other information that has been collected about the customer."
See, that seems to presuppose that your main information source is going to be the client, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, rather, and I think that's probably inevitable for all but the most public of people.
But of course, that is just the starting point, and you'd want to get some kind of verification of what you're being told, particularly as Wolfsburg are at pains to talk about information rather than documents. So what you're told rather than what you're shown.
Well, yes. The FAQ continues. While some gaps in the chronology of wealth accumulation over time are not uncommon, any significant gaps and or material inconsistencies may present challenges to determining plausibility. In such cases, an FI may consider seeking further clarification from the customer, for example, by requesting additional documentation or conducting independent inquiries.
That's not terribly strongly worded, is it? I mean, that quote, "may consider seeking further clarification," end quote, and "from the customer or independent inquiries."
Yeah, I thought that was perhaps on the light side. But I think this might come down to the fact that this guidance has to work across many, many firms with different policies, risk appetites and resources.
Oh, even so, Ray, I think this is looser than I'd like.
Well, the concluding paragraph of this section might make you feel happier, though, Graham.
Go on then, try me.
It reads, "While FIs conduct due diligence in different ways, using multiple channels and terminology, the due diligence information should be sufficient to create a coherent picture of the customer, establish their source of wealth, and be available for review by an independent party. Source of wealth should be documented appropriately and the information retained pursuant to the FI's document retention policies and procedures."
You're right, that does make me happier. Mm. Proper documentation that is reviewable by a third party would be a big step forward if it was consistently applied.
But coming back to the issue of corroboration, the FAQ sets out the types of corroboration that are acceptable. It says this can take various forms, listing the following: information from independent, publicly available, reputable sources or documents issued by reputable third parties, such as company registries, banks, accountants and lawyers or notaries.
Now, that's going to be very useful for banks who often fret about what can constitute source of wealth verification. This point about accountants and lawyers' documents has long been controversial, so for Wolfsburg to say those are potentially on the table is significant.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's not an unambiguous endorsement. The FAQ continues, the level of reliance to be placed on evidence used for corroboration requires the exercise of judgment and is determined by the source, type and verifiability of the evidence provided. FIs should consider all the evidence collected and determine whether it is sufficient to support the source of wealth.
Okay, so you might feel differently about a letter from the client's accountant that supports other evidence than just the letter on its own.
That's how I'd read it, Graham, and taking an appropriate risk-based view.
And then, Ray, comes some interesting guidance on what to do when things still aren't quite clear.
Yes, it says, where corroboration proves to be difficult or impossible for the customer, for example, in cases of generational wealth or a substantial inheritance received decades ago, the FI should assess the plausibility of the information provided and attempt to corroborate key milestones in the customer's wealth history.
Okay.
It lists some factors that should be considered. These begin with, quotes, the overall inherent risk rating of the customer, which typically will include an assessment of risk based on the customer's specific circumstances, products and services usage, transactional and behavioural activity, actual or expected, and geographic factors.
Now, for most firms, undertaking due diligence on source of wealth will mostly happen for high-risk customers anyway, so that might not really be very helpful.
That's a fair point, Graham. Secondly, it lists the quality and plausibility of the information provided as part of the due diligence and source of wealth exercise, the evidence available to corroborate it, and whether this reduces, and by how much, the inherent risk. E.g., available evidence indicates that the customer's wealth is sufficiently transparent.
And this is a subtle point, actually. If I'm reading it right, it's saying, look at the whole due diligence exercise overall in terms of the plausibility of the information and the corroboration you've been able to do, and see if this makes you happy that you don't need to worry too much about dotting all the I's in this particular case.
That's how I read it, Graham, and I think that as a firm, you'd want to be careful how far you relied on this argument.
Agreed. What else is offered?
Next is, any other information held by the FI on the customer and available for consideration, including from other lines of business or jurisdictions of operations, subject to banking secrecy or other confidentiality provisions for sharing information.
Fair enough, but that would be a given for me anyway, I think.
Indeed. And finally, market or segment-specific governance committees using experts who understand those markets or segments and any specific considerations that may apply.
OK, and we typically see this, don't we, Ray, where a risk committee might call upon industry expertise to help them understand typical risks in a sector and the impacts on a particular relationship.
Yes, we do. And where that is well documented, it can work very well.
Does the FAQ say what should happen where the firm cannot meet its standards on knowing the source of wealth?
It gives a list of options the firm might consider.
Is it a short list, Ray?
Well, not as short as you might think, Graham.
Well, I can think of three acceptable actions, personally.
Yep.
Stop the onboarding.
Mm-hmm.
Exit a customer who's already onboarded.
Mm-hmm.
Or if not, restrict what they can do to types of activity and at a level where you feel safe.
Yep, they're all there. But there are two more options as well.
Are there? What are they then?
Firstly, increase the risk rating of the customer. And secondly, subject the customer's transactional activity to heightened monitoring. And to an extent, they're quite similar actions.
I can't see what that will achieve, actually, Ray.
No, nor me. I think we have to start from the position that most firms will only be looking at source of wealth for high-risk clients anyway, so bumping up their risk level might be moot.
And also, if they can, so what? when you raise the risk level, you're increasing the ongoing monitoring, all of which is undertaken against the backdrop of the KYC information, which includes source of wealth. So all you're effectively doing is conducting more frequent checks that will still be ineffective because you're still missing some information.
Or to put it another way, if there are holes in your curtains, it doesn't matter how often you clean them, they'll still let the warmth out.
That's about how I see it too. But I think this comes back to the fact that Wolfsburg have to give guidance that works for a very wide range of institutions. I could probably envisage a specific firm policy that means increasing the risk rating might be an appropriate response to missing information.
I'm not sure I could, Graham.
Well, I didn't say it would be easy, Ray.
Oh, fair enough.
But broadly, I think there is enough guidance here to let firms more confidently refine their own approaches than they may previously have felt able to do.
Yes, and this has been an area of uncertainty for so long that perhaps we were expecting too much for it suddenly to become much simpler.
Yeah, I mean, all firms will need to read this guidance carefully and determine whether their own policies and procedures need any adjustment to reflect it.
And it's worth saying that you and I would be happy to help firms do that directly in the short term.
We'd be delighted, Ray. and we don't always make it clear that we are working independent practitioners ourselves and very happy to talk about this type of assignment.
Well said. So, what will we be looking at next time?
Do you know, Ray, I don't actually know. And for a change, I think it's the middle of summer and we're getting some decent weather. So, are you happy just to see where we are next week and what's coming along and talk about it?
It's a bit of a first for us. We always know where we're going next. But you know what? The thing about this world is something always turns up.
And I'm sure it will.
I'm looking forward to it.